And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, hello there. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program for Tuesday. It's kind of dreary out there, but if you haven't been outside, it's really warm at the moment. It's going to get quickly very cold later, and then it's going to warm up again into the 50s on Thursday. A very strange week, very strange winter. Well, welcome wherever you're listening to us, either on your radio, in the car, or in other parts of the country or around the world as we stream the program online. And some of you folks who used to live in Butler and are now in Florida or Texas or whatever, I think you'll be especially interested in the first portion of the program today because we're going to be talking a little bit about Butler County history. And we welcome for the first time to visit with us the new executive director of the Butler County Historical Society. Her name is Jennifer Ford. Jennifer, nice to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm sorry that you have to meet me when I've got laryngitis, so I'm a little squeaky here today. I apologize.
You can't tell. You're a real pro. You're overcoming.
Well, we're pressing on.
Yes, you got your chest voice going there.
Well, at any rate, I certainly want to talk about the society, but let's meet you first and let the people of Butler County meet you. Jennifer Ford, where do you come from as the new executive director of the Butler County Historical Society?
I'm a Pittsburgher by birth, spent most of my life in Pittsburgh. In 2008, I moved to the quaint, historic little town of Bedford, Pennsylvania. I thought I was retiring from the museum consulting business. So I moved there, opened up a quaint little alpaca shop in that quaint little town, and had a very nice few years of peace and quiet. Then the Fort Bedford Museum called upon me to take over their program. So I did that, and for the last 5 years, a team of us have been busy turning Fort Bedford Museum into sort of a basic mid-20th century antiquarian collection of objects into a real interpretive museum. Decided last year that I wanted to come back to this area. My folks are now at a point where they could use someone on hand, so I kept my eyes open. And when the opportunity to work at the Butler County Historical Society came up, I jumped at the chance and, you know, was hired mid-October, and by late October I'd packed up the dogs and the Keurig and headed west again.
Well, we're fortunate to have you here. I have to ask you a little bit about Fort Bedford.
Yeah.
This would have been at the time when the Appalachian Range was the frontier American colonies?
Most certainly. Bedford really came into existence because in 1758, during the French and Indian War, General John Forbes had his troops cut a trail over old Indian trails across Pennsylvania. Forbes Road, of course, still, you know, begins in Carlisle and cuts straight through to the East End in Pittsburgh. So his plan was every 40 miles to build a supply depot. And so you have like Fort Carlisle and Fort Bedford and Fort Ligonier, and then the next stop was Pittsburgh. So there was nothing there but a trading post, and General Forbes came along, had his men build a fort, and from there, a town grew up. And fortunately for Bedford, the Pennsylvania Turnpike bypassed it by about 4 miles. And so the town really does look like it might have 200 years ago. It's really an extraordinary little town. It's an easy place to live.
And, of course, as baby boomers around here know, General Forbes, after building the string of forts, ended up in Pittsburgh, where he built Forbes Field, where the Pittsburgh Pirates
of course, everybody knows that.
Forbes Field is long gone, but it was named after General
Forbes.
That's
right. Much to our dismay, Forbes Field is gone. Here's to it.
And we still have Forbes Avenue, so, you know.
We most certainly do.
Memory of him. So if you worked in Pittsburgh, and you were involved in theater work, too, in Pittsburgh.
I was.
You?
That's my first career was theatrical lighting designer. I first walked into the Pittsburgh Playhouse, the late lamented Pittsburgh Playhouse, in 1969. I was going to be an actress, wised up by 1970, and became a lighting designer. And I designed shows there at the Playhouse and other venues around town until about 2008. So, of course, you know, I'm part of the Playhouse family, and when Point Park made the decision to take down the old Playhouse last year, there are hundreds of us who are really quite upset, but we have our family, we have the memories, you know, the shows will go on in our hearts, but that theater exists no longer, and we're very broken up about it. The happy news is that while I was in Bedford, I discovered the Mishler Theater in Altoona, Pennsylvania. The Mishler is an absolutely gorgeous jewel box of a theater that was built in 1907. It was saved and restored and still looks exactly the way it did 110 years ago. The only upgrades have been in the technical area. So they have lighting equipment and a lighting board that just knocked my socks off. So I'm here in Butler now and happy to be home, but several times a year I will be making a trek back over to Altoona to light. This May I'm going to run over and light Gypsy over there. And that's so as long as I can light somewhere, I'm a happy camper.
Well, there's a pretty thriving amateur theater community here, the Butler Little Theater.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you've had a chance to visit it yet.
I haven't. I've had a chance to do exactly nothing but go back and forth from home to work. I'm still saying, Google, where's the nearest Giant Eagle? So, but it's my intention to find my family, because no matter where you are, if you're theater folk, you're family. Yeah. So I'll find mine here in Butler.
Well, the Butler Little Theater started in 1941, and it has operated continuously.
Oh, good for them.
Since never a break, even during World War II,
that's
when they had to recruit a couple of students from Slippery Rock University because they didn't have any men.
Right. Oh, right. You know, of course.
Yeah.
Well, good for them. I look forward to meeting them and seeing their space.
Well, let's talk about the Butler County Historical Society, which is quite an active historical society, by the way, as I'm sure you've found out, including something that they started to do probably close to 10 years ago now, was publish a calendar every year, a pictorial calendar. And are there any left for 2020 for people that don't have one yet?
There are a few. It's the industry. Every year there's a different theme.
Mm-hmm.
And this year it was the industries of Butler. And they sold very, very quickly. We went through, I think, four big boxes before the new year. Of course, now that we're into February, we're down to a precious few. But I think they'll still work for the next 11 months.
Mm-hmm.
So please come on into the Butler County Historical Society and pick them up. People really, really love them.
The Historical Society offices, by the way, are located in the Senator Lowry House.
Walter Lowry House at 123 West Diamond Street.
Right behind the courthouse.
Right behind the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
Through the winter, we're open to the public only on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 11 to 3. But if you know you're coming and that time isn't convenient, give us a call. We're there, even though the doors aren't open to the public. So we're busy backstage getting wonderful new things ready for next year. So give us a call. Let us know you want to come in and pick up a calendar, and we'll open the door for you.
Last I saw, it was a $10 donation. Is that
still the same? Absolutely correct, yeah.
And, of course, it's a fundraiser for the Historical Society. I do believe that retired President Judge Martin J. O'Brien was one of the people who came up with the original idea to do this, and they weren't quite sure how it was going to do, and it just took off. And people wait for these calendars every year.
They really do. I was astonished. I mean, obviously, I had no idea how popular it is. And the phone would ring, and people would knock at the door. People would call and order 10, 12, 14 of them and give them away as Christmas presents.
Well, part of the reason that they're able to be so nice and educational every year is the treasure trove of photographs that the Historical Society has in its archives.
Yeah, we have about 40,000 photographs in the archives. And at the moment, we are quite busy getting those that have not yet been cataloged. When I left the office just a few minutes ago, there were two interns there cataloging photographs, and they were working on photographs of schools from the 1890s. So they'll be kept busy because there are many, 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 many boxes of photographs that have to be properly identified. We also have a volunteer who comes in. I think she's been volunteering at the Historical Society for decades, and she will sit at her desk for hours at a time and identify what is in the photograph, because so often people keep photographs and don't write anything, so you have no idea who or what you're looking at. So she's helping us out.
The headquarters, the offices of the Historical Society, part of Butler's history, the building. It was the house of the only senator to come from Butler.
From Butler.
Walter Lowry.
Yeah, the one and only. And I'm finding out more about him. I mean, truly, I am brand new to Butler. So I burn the midnight oil trying to find out, learn everything I can about Butler history. What I do... It sounds rather odd, but I don't necessarily need to know the history of the place I'm working. As a consultant, I know how to get museums and historical house museums up to the next level of functioning, help with their interpretive programming and such. So what I don't always have is the content. So I'm busy learning about Butler history content. But I recently found out, although many of your listeners may know, that Senator Lowry was an avid abolitionist, that he worked on the Dred Scott case. And I have to run this down and verify it, but I'm given to understand that he handed Dred Scott his freedom papers after Scott came off the ship. He'd been in England, you know, for fear that he would be recaptured and taken back south. So apparently Senator Lowry was not just involved on paper, but he was really boots on the ground involved with the abolition movement. So I can't wait to find out more about that.
Isn't it amazing that the Historical Society is headquartered in the house that he built?
In the house that he built. He wasn't there very long. Really, the house is as you see it now, and the way we're spending the winter redecorating, reinterpreting the house. It really belonged for the longest period of time, and we have the most artifacts associated with the Sullivan family. And they're from, you know, circa the Civil War era, straight through the 20th century by marriage. So we open a new box every day and find more of their clothing, their books, their photographs. So as we go, we're making plans to really make that family come to life in the house.
If you're wondering, if you're not familiar with Senator Walter Lowry, he built this house in 1828, I think, 1828. And that's got to be about the time that Andrew Jackson, I would guess, was president in that era anyway. Obviously, 30-some years before the Civil War. Goes back a ways, folks.
Going back a wee ways,
that's the bottom line. And it's been not remodeled, but it's been taken care of over the years. I know a decade or so ago they did a tremendous amount of work in the rafters of the because there was danger of the roof collapsing. Folks, it was built in 1828, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, I mean, and it's as houses that were built then, it's solid, but in the late 1980s, early 1990s, massive restoration project was undertaken. Everything from the floor joists to the wallpaper was really saved.
And there may be some listeners who are saying, what do you mean Walter Lowry was the only United States senator to come from Butler County? What about Rick Santorum? Not all that long ago. Rick Santorum did go to Butler High School for a while, but he was not a native of Butler. So
okay. Yeah, we have to. Yeah, you'll get calls. You'll get emails. Yeah.
I need to take a break. It's so nice to meet the new executive director of the Butler County Historical Society. Jennifer Ford is with us here in the studio today. And what a coincidence on the next segment of the program. We'll tell you about that when we come back from the break here. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be back after these words.
Why pay more when you can get tobacco for less? Their store in Pullman Square Plaza includes a custom walk-in humidor stocked with a great variety of cigars and a 19-foot vape juice bar. Not to mention their Western Pennsylvania's largest glass emporium. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department supplies a wide selection of high-quality CBD products and is always adding to their product lines. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less, with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Hey, here's a good way to beat the winter blahs. Get out of town for a few days. Why not take a trip with Butler Motor Tours? Butler Motor Tours, a local company. They're on South Monroe Street in Butler. They've been around for more than 75 years. And when you travel with Butler Motor Tours, you travel in comfort on one of their big motor coaches, their big cruisers. By the way, they always take trips down to Florida, too, in the winter months. So there's an idea to look at. If you want to check out their offerings, just go to their website. It's butlerbus.com. Butlerbus.com. All their upcoming trips are listed there with the dates and the itinerary and the cost and all of that. You can even book online if you so desire. And you can get gift certificates, too. Butler Motor Tours. Check them out online at butlerbus.com. That's Butler Motor Tours online at butlerbus.com. Welcome back, friends. I'm meeting for the first time. I'm assuming that most of you listeners are too. The new executive director of the Butler County Historical Society, Jennifer Ford. She's only been on board here for a few months now. But it's certainly, I think we're blessed to have her come to Butler, given her training, her education in this area, and, you know, taking our historical society up to another level. There was an education outreach coordinator hired last fall. Is Sarah
there? Donaldson, and actually her title has been changed. I mean, what we both do, education and outreach, but as it turns out, Sarah's specialty, Sarah has a master's in library science, specializing in archival and collections management work. And wouldn't you know, that is precisely what we need. She is more than passingly familiar. She's very, very familiar with Past Perfect, which is a professional museum database software.
Mm-hmm.
So over the decades, people have kept track of objects and photographs and documents at the society, but everything needs to be properly cataloged into Past Perfect. It'll probably take a year. And thank goodness Sarah knows how to do it. So she and her team of interns, she is now the collections manager. That's her new title. So they are going to be very busy over there in the coming months getting things cataloged.
Past Perfect is the name of the software?
Past Perfect, yes. We have Past Perfect version 5. And users of it claim it's intuitive. I'll just leave them to their work. I can fumble around in Past Perfect, but it's a language unto it. It literally is called nomenclature.
So I haven't heard that term, Past Perfect, since my Latin class.
Here's to Sarah and her team. They really have their work cut out for them, but it's a good time.
Have you seen any of the photographic textbooks on the old schoolhouses? Are there any of theirs? Any of those still around up there?
Indeed. In fact, the second one. I'm going to forget the title because I'm just in that place now, is we still have quite a number of them. In fact, I'll go ahead and say that we're going to, I'll make it official, we're going to extend the sale. They were priced around $40, and we'd taken about $10 off. So once again, as with the calendars, please stop by and pick up one of those books. If you went to school in Butler or have family who went to school in Butler as far back as the 19th century, they're a great resource and lots of fun to look through.
I have to tell you a little bit of backstory on this program.
Oh, good.
Several years ago. And I probably close to 10 years ago now. I don't remember. Time flies. We were talking about the old one-room schoolhouses here in Butler, and we started getting more and more calls from people who said, yes, you know, I mean, my mother, my grandmother went to one of those, and it was out in Prospect. It was near Slippery Rock. We ended up talking about this for two straight weeks from people who would call in and say, I know where there was another one.
Wow.
I know where there's one that's now been renovated and turned into a small home.
Nifty.
And it was actually from that.
That the book.
That was the genesis of the first book. When we started collecting pictures of these. And it turned out that one book wasn't enough.
So there's two.
It was the second book. And I think there might even have been either an addendum or something of, you know, more pictures began to drift in.
Yeah,
and,
great story.
It's truly amazing. And
well, you know the Little Red Schoolhouse Jeopardy story now.
Yes.
I mean, we typically get a few hundred shares on Facebook. You want to know how many the post about Jeopardy's question about the Little Red Schoolhouse generated?
How many?
28,000.
Oh, my gosh.
28,000. Nothing we ever do or ever will do will generate that much excitement that
folks,
our Little Red Schoolhouse was mentioned on Jeopardy.
If you're not familiar with this story, first of all, one of the properties that is owned and curated by the Butler County Historical Society is the Little Red Schoolhouse. It was one of these one-room schoolhouses located in the city of Butler. It's still there, right beside what is now the Butler Middle School and the St. Peter Anglican Church. That's the Little Red Schoolhouse. And it's owned and operated by the Historical Society. And there was a question on Jeopardy a few weeks ago.
Go figure.
About, you know, I forget exactly how it was phrased, but you would go to Butler, PA, and some other place to see one of these.
One of these, Little Red Schoolhouse.
And lo and behold, and you had
People logged onto Facebook, commented, liked, and then shared, and their people shared. And you know how Facebook works exponentially. And before you knew it, we'd had over 28,000 reactions to it. Like I said, we won't be able to pull anything out of the hat that matches that, but at least our Facebook page got shared.
I know that Cooper Cabin, which is another property owned and operated and curated by the Historical Society, I know it's closed during the winter. Same thing with the Little Red Schoolhouse. Because, you know, hey, folks, the heat in there is from a pot-bellied stove.
That's right. We're not going to go there.
No. So it won't be reopening for tours until
I think
warm weather.
Yeah.
And there are tours by school kids. You know, they come on field trips
they
to
do.
See what education was like way back when, before we had jointures, before we had modern schools. Before we had individual classrooms for each of the age
groups.
That's
right. Everybody was together.
It was generally, what, grades 1 through 8? That was probably about it.
Yeah, and that was about it. You know, the kids sat in different rows and took different subjects, but they were all in the same room.
And part of the chores, it wasn't just dusting the erasers. You had to feed the pot-bellied
stove,
and you had to go bring in water. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, imagine.
It's great stuff. Great stuff.
Yeah.
What about your hopes and dreams and plans for the Butler County Historical Society? Do you have some sort of a vision or something that you'd like to see accomplished while you're the executive director, Jennifer?
I do. I mean, we stand on the shoulders of those who came before us.
Pat Collins was the most recent director.
Thanks to Pat Collins. She did amazing work while she was there. I mean, the Wall Dogs will be testament to that forever.
Yes.
So, you know, I'll be hard-pressed to fill those shoes. What I see happening at the Historical Society is something that museum professionals are really talking about quite a bit these days. As much as we loved them as kids, historic house museums are becoming less and less and less popular. They're closing every day across the country. People simply aren't interested in history anymore. The generations coming up are minimalists, where we and our parents and grandparents love to look at old stuff. There's something quite like looking at old stuff in an old house. Younger people just don't care.
Wow.
So the conversation lately is, and what I intend to try my best to accomplish at this Historical Society, is to find ways to be of service to the community. The watchword is go out your doors and walk around the neighborhood. Find out what needs exist in your particular community. Make partnerships with other community uplift organizations and find out how you can serve them. So it's not anymore, it's not about bringing people into our doors. It's about finding out how we can best uplift the community in partnership with other organizations. So I've started having meetings with folks, around town. The other thing is meeting and forming partnerships with the other historical societies in Butler County.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you've got the Harmony people coming in next, and met with them and had a fabulous time, and the Jeep Bantam people. But what we need to do is offer our sites as a place where people in the community, especially people who are disinclined to go to a museum, how we can help them, how we can serve them.
I'm so sorry to hear that sea change. I mean, I can remember, I have snapshot memories as a young child when, Mom and Dad, God bless them, took my brother and I to Mount Vernon.
Sure. Places like Mount Vernon will always be viable. But Williamsburg, the mother of them all, bleeds millions of dollars every year.
Wow, I didn't know that.
They are in the red always.
Oh, my.
So unless your house is attached to a very well-known and popular figure in American history, or unless you're a Christmas Story house,
mm-hmm.
folks these days are just not inclined to come on in and look around. And we have to grapple with that reality and find a new way to be of importance in the community, even if it's not the old way. I mean, of course, we'll always be open for tours. We're, reconfiguring the rooms now. We'll still have the Halloween, the cider and the donuts and the ghost stories and the Christmas party. All of those things will still be in place. Tea parties, talks. We still will have the cemetery walk. I'll plug that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
May 16th. We'll be rolling out tickets for that in March, probably, so stay tuned.
We still have local histories and artifacts for sale?
Well,
or is that kind of running out?
To be clear, we never sell actual artifacts. Objects that belong in the collections.
That was a poorly chosen word.
That's okay. Yeah. I just wanted to, so people wouldn't think they're selling off the artifact.
No.
Absolutely. And I don't want people to think that it's not going to, what they know of the Lawry House won't continue to be. We will still be there as an historic home that people can come and tour and enjoy and see the objects and places people were using them. We're working hard on one room that has been a bedroom. We found so many wonderful children's objects from the early 20th century, probably belonging to Isabel Shaw Adams. They were her things, as a child. She was born in 1904, so we'll have an entire room done as a nursery. We'll have servants' quarters. We'll have a man's bedroom and a woman's bedroom, Louise, and Moses. Moses Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things will still be in place, and people can come and tour. We just have to go a new direction and get out into the community as well.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that vision with us.
Sure, yeah. Sure. It's what we need to do, because if we don't find a new way to exist in the world, we too may end up as yet another shuttered house museum, and we can't let that happen.
Oh, heavens no. Can't do it.
Nope.
Yeah. Well, nice to meet you, first
and
of all.
And you. Thanks for having me on.
And nice to introduce you to the community. I'm sure many folks are hearing you for the first time here today. Don't be a stranger.
In fact, I'll
extend the invitation right now when we get close to cemetery walk time.
Make sure
that you come back and give us all the details.
I'll make sure of it, because we'll be plugging the cemetery walk in our annual meeting, and we have a couple fundraisers up our sleeves. We're still working on a trivia night and a bingo, so fun things are coming.
And it'll be springtime.
It'll be springtime, yes, indeed.
She's the new executive director of the Butler County Historical Society, on board just a few months now, Jennifer Ford, and delightful to have her with us and to meet her today. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
More to come, as I said, and this is a pure coincidence that we are going to be chatting today with some folks from Harmony Museum, and we're going to be talking about, speaking of local history, George Washington's trip through this very area, western Pennsylvania, and through what is now Butler County. And we'll tell you about the opportunity, speaking of being active in history, young and old, how you can take a hike with George, or the closest thing you'll ever see to George, coming up a couple of Saturdays down the road. So please stick around. We'll get the details on that coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes after these words.
Home care through Concordia Visiting Nurses includes services which foster recovery, rehabilitation, recuperation, and health education. Ask your doctor about medical support needs at home. Ask for a referral for Concordia Visiting Nurses and enjoy the benefits of skilled practitioners coming to your home to help you feel better. For tips for family caregivers, visit elderpagespittsburgh.com.
The Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, located at 140 Newcastle Road. It's about halfway up Newcastle Hill, just down from the State Police Barracks. This is the Butler area's newest funeral home, Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home, the first and only value-designed funeral home built specifically for that purpose. A funeral home that offers styles, types, and levels of service that others are not able or willing to offer. They can transfer all prearranged funeral services and policies as well. It's an entirely new idea. It's local, and there's a hometown gentleman running the operation, Spencer D. Geibel. Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, 140 Newcastle Road in Butler. Not affiliated with any other funeral home.
Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers congratulates orthopedic foot and ankle surgeon Dr. William Saar for being named a Best Doc by Pittsburgh Magazine for the third straight year.
I'm Dr. William Saar with Tri-Rivers. Whether you suffer a foot or ankle-related trauma, such as a fracture or dislocation, or require reconstructive foot and ankle surgery, I rely on my extensive experience and specialized training to get you back on your feet. For more information or to schedule an appointment, please visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us. And as I said, we continue talking about local history today in a way that you can get actively involved coming up just a few Saturdays down the road. Harmony Museum is joining up with a number of other groups to sponsor Cherry Pie Hikes. Once again, a little bit later on this month, Rodney Gash is here from Harmony Museum. Rod, good to see you.
Hey, good. Thanks for having me on.
Sure, sure. Well, first of all, in case people are listening in the car and they're pulling into the parking lot at the shopping center, we want to make sure they know when the hikes are going to take place. It's a couple of Saturdays down the road, three Saturdays down the road.
That's right. Saturday, February 22nd. We usually have it a Saturday near George Washington's birthday, and this year we have it right on that day, on the 22nd.
Right on. Yeah.
And so the hikes pretty much take place in the morning, and you have a choice of a number of different hikes to take, and we always say we hope for bad weather because that's the kind of weather George Washington had.
Well, and we're talking about this a little, you know, here we are two weeks or so before it takes place, but we want to make sure and remind people that they need to reserve a spot if they want to go on one of these hikes, right? You got to reserve your space.
That's right, because we want to control the number of people so that you can hear the person giving the hike and guiding the hike. So so the history hikes we have limited. There's six of them, and they take just a half hour. Mm-hmm. It took George Washington 2.5 months to do the do his trip, but we kind of condense it down in a half hour and tell that story of his mission that took him right through Butler County and almost ended up having him shot in Butler County back in 1753 when he was a young man. And it, the event is at the Jennings. Some people call it the Jennings State Park, but it's actually the Jennings Environmental Education Center, and they have a great online system where you can log on, pick your hike, and then it'll give you all kinds of background information on, you know, what to wear and when to show up.
And it'll cost you the enormous sum of $3, right?
$3, and you get to see a reenactment and have a piece of cherry pie. And I know we'll say this a couple times, but you can register on the Department of Natural Resources site, and the best way to do that is to go to events.dcnr.pa.gov. And that gets you onto their events general page for everything in the state. And if you do a search of cherry pie, then it'll zero you in on those hikes that we're having that day.
DCNR, Department of Conservation and Natural Resources.
Right.
Go on. And again, you pick a time. There are several hikes that day on the 22nd.
That's right. Depending on if you want to, if you're more interested in just getting a long hike. There's a 7-mile hike that actually starts at the boat launch in Moraine and hikes up to Jennings. That hike is just a long, strenuous hike, and there'll be people from the Butler chapter of the North Country Trail to guide that and make sure everybody's safe and nobody gets lost. There are three 75-minute nature walks, and these are led by the staff of the Jennings Environmental Center. And this is more to a walk in the prairies and the woods and see the fauna and flora that happens to be out this time of year. And then we have six history hikes. And on these hikes, you actually see a reenactment of the shooting. We work with a group of reenactors. One portrays George Washington. One portrays his guide, Christopher Gist. And one portrays the Native American who traveled with them part of that day back in December 26, 1753, and for reasons we don't exactly know, because there wasn't a post shot interview, but he took a shot at George Washington and missed, and certainly our national history would have been much different if he had connected.
Wow. So there'll be an individual who's dressed as George Washington.
Right. They're in costume. They use the guns they use are replicas, because nobody should be firing a 250-year-old firearm. Mm-hmm. But they have flintlock rifles, so it's and they're out in the woods, and it's very much kind of like seeing a little bit of theater. And there's a guide for each hike who will not be in costume. He'll be in Gore-Tex and a wool cap, and he'll tell you the story of George Washington's mission, why he was out here as a young man, what he found. And then the adventures that kind of befell him as he tried to make his way back from western Pennsylvania back to Williamsburg, Virginia, where the Virginia colony was, because it was at that point, this area was considered part of the Virginia colony, and the governor of Virginia wanted to make sure the French weren't building forts on British land.
Yeah, and that was, as I recall from my history class a long, long time ago, that remained a source of controversy for some time. Virginia wanted to claim what is now Western Pennsylvania, and of course, Pennsylvania wanted to claim it too.
And if you think about it, they actually did get sort of some, because the panhandle of West Virginia comes right up along the side. If you head due west out of Pittsburgh, the first state you hit is not Ohio, it's West Virginia.
Steubenville, right?
Yeah, right. That was part of Virginia at one point.
Well, that's why it was the governor of Virginia who commissioned this trip by George Washington and not the governor of Pennsylvania.
Exactly, yeah.
George Washington, you know, when we think of him, when we hear the name, we think of that famous portrait, or perhaps we think of his image on a quarter. This was much later in life when George Washington went through this area, through what is now Butler County. He was a very, very young man.
Yeah, he was 21. I often think, you know, it's like imagine a student at Slippery Rock or BC3. That should be our image. And he didn't make the trip alone, because he had Christopher Gist was an experienced guide, and then he actually had an entourage that provided by the Virginia colony. So there were some people who were carrying items, and then as he went along the way, one of his first stops in this area was the Indian village of Logstown, which is near Ambridge, where Ambridge is now. And there he picked up some additional Indians who traveled with him, because the natives in the area were very concerned about what the French and British were going to do, because this was really their land, and in a way they were welcomed in one sense, because they had all these great items to trade, but they were suspicious of what their long-term goals were. And in Washington's case, in the Virginia case, they saw this land as potential for settlers.
And do keep in mind, Rod already mentioned, Virginia claimed what's now Western Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania claimed it. And at the same time, the French, from the history of the early French explorers, Marquette, Joliet, LaSalle, you recognize these names, of course, come down from Canada, also claimed much of this territory. In fact, why do you think we have names like Presque Isle up in the area that's French?
And the French Creek that runs.
French Creek up in Oil City. Fort Duquesne, Duquesne University. Those are all French names.
Right. And if you can think of a map, the French were in St. Louis and in New Orleans and in Quebec. And the thing that connected those was the Ohio River, and going right down through Pittsburgh and down to the Ohio River. So if Washington hadn't been successful, like if he had been shot and killed on his journey back, it may have taken months before the British sent another envoy. And at that time, they may have been more firmly established. They were building forts already. They completed a fort in what's now Franklin, PA, in early part of 1754. So a few more forts and a better establishment at the forks of the Ohio, and we'd be having this interview in French rather than English.
They were already coming down the river, and I need to take a break here, but I want to tell a little bit more of the story, because Washington's mission was to politely tell the French to get out of Dodge, stop building these forts down the Allegheny. And he had to go all the way up to, was it Fort LeBeouf?
LeBeouf, yeah, which is now Waterford.
Okay.
And there's a wonderful museum up there at Waterford that kind of gives a view of what the fort might have looked like. And
is this up around like Edinburgh or somewhere?
Yes, yeah, that's up in that area. So a general came down from Fort Presque Isle to meet Washington at a fort. He was apparently the top dog of the French. And I've read his name, but it's a lot of syllables, and I couldn't. I would butcher it on the air.
We'll take a break. Come back to talk more with Rodney Gash. It's a treat to have him with us here today as we give you a preview of the hikes that you could take. Or maybe, you know, there's someone in your family. Young people are welcome to go on these hikes. They're very educational. If you've never seen or heard a flintlock rifle being fired, for example, out in the woods, that's a treat in itself.
That it is, and it's more than just what happens in the woods, because we have another, we have like five or six reenactors that have their gear set out on some table, and that's fascinating. They've got, and some of them actually are date from that time, a tin cup, a powder horn, you know, that are over 200 years old, and then some of the things are like they'll be dressed in replica clothing of what a French and Indian War soldier might have worn, or a trapper in that time period.
We'll continue our conversation with Rodney Gash here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Well, despite the old groundhog's prediction, we still may see some winter. The folks at West End Tire and Service are ready to go. They've got over 400 snow tires in stock for your car, light-duty truck. In fact, they've got tires for just about anything. You know where they are down there on West Cunningham Street. Used to be Siemens Tire Service. Well, they still have the same great people and the same great service that they always had. They can do brakes, shocks, struts, oil changes. They'll align your front end, rotate your tires, and fix your tires. And their talented technicians are there all the time to check your air pressure and do evaluations for free anytime you stop in. It's West End Tire and Service, West Cunningham Street, right next to Battery Warehouse Plus.
Central Electric Cooperative is excited to announce its annual Good Neighbor Scholarship Program, which will award scholarships worth $2,000 each to 10 individuals. Scholarships are available to all members, whether you're an adult returning to the classroom, a college or trade school student, or a high school senior. The funds used for these scholarships come from unclaimed capital credits and do not impact member rates. Applications are scored based on voluntary, non-paid service to community, school, and church. To be eligible, you must be a Central Electric member, be enrolled in a post-secondary educational institution, complete the Good Neighbor Scholarship application available on our website, and compose a one-page essay on your volunteer community involvement. Submissions are due March 15th, with scholarships being awarded in May. Visit Central Electric Cooperative's website for more information. This is Emily Shoemaker for Central Electric Cooperative. This institution is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
Michael's Restaurant is now open for breakfast at 7 a.m. Join us for breakfast any day of the week, including after church on Sundays. Have you made plans for dinner yet? Bring the family for a great home-cooked meal. Michael's Restaurant also offers great Sunday dinner specials, stuffed chicken breasts, stuffed pork chops, lasagna, and more.
Chatting with Rodney Gash from Historic Harmony Museum, one of the organizations that sponsors these wonderful opportunities to go on a hike, a short hike or a long one, with a reenactor of George Washington coming up on his birthday, February 22nd. A little bit more detail about this, Rod. First of all, these hikes of varying lengths, they're mostly in the morning, right?
Correct, yeah. At 9 o'clock, there's the long hike starts. That's a 7-mile hike, and that's one that you really should be in pretty good shape for, and we don't encourage, you know, any you know, people under, kids under 10 or something, that'd be ready to walk 7 miles, and, you know, so, so that starts at 9 o'clock, actually, in, Moraine State Park under the boat launch at 5:28. Then there's, also at 9 o'clock at Jennings, there's a 75-minute nature walk, and that'll take you out onto the prairie and learn a little bit more about the interesting fauna and flora that might be out in winter or will be out once the weather warms up. And then interspersed between those nature walks, and there's three of them at different times, are six of these history hikes. And again, you have to sign up for them because we cap out the hike size at 25, so you can hear the guide and get a good view of the reenactment. And you can sign up for that, for all these hikes, at the DCNR website. Should I give that address again?
Please, okay. Please do.
Yeah. So it's the best way I've found is to type in events.dcnr.pa.gov, and then if you do a search for Cherry Pie, that'll get you right down to the events at Jennings. You can probably also go through to the Jennings site and look at what events are coming up. And they'll give you a chance to register. It gives a nice description of each hike, and you can register for a hike time.
And you do get a piece of cherry pie.
And you get a piece of cherry pie to boot, and hot apple cider, and there's usually some cookies. So it's a great event and a really fun thing to take the family out, because not only do you get some fresh air, but you learn a little bit about local history. And there's also two history authors who are going to be there, Brady Kreitzer and Jason Cherry, who've written books about this time frame. So good chance to talk to those authors and see what books they've written.
There are other organizations that join with the Harmony Museum, Historic Harmony, to organize this whole affair on Saturday, February 22nd.
Yeah, that's right. It's a real great team effort, the Butler chapter of the North Country Trail. They've actually been doing the cherry pie hikes for, over 20 years. The Washington Trail 1753 group, that's the blue and white signs that kind of look like Washington's head from a quarter. I work with that group, and we've been doing George Washington-related hikes since 2003, and also co-sponsoring is the Butler Outdoor Club, the Butler County Tourism and Convention Bureau, and of course Jennings is a great partner, and they have a nice facility. We try to give you a taste of what it was like to walk in George Washington's footsteps, except you do have hot apple cider and flush toilets, so we don't take it to an extreme. So
it's hard to try to get an image in your mind's eye what George Washington, what he looked like at age 21. And, of course, we have no photographs of George Washington. We have a couple of portraits that are pretty famous, but there was no photography in George Washington's day. So all we have are artists' representations of what he looked like, and I don't know whether there's anything that depicts him at age 21.
The thing that's maybe the closest was there's a painting that was done when he was about 40, but he wanted to have it done in his Virginia militia uniform, which is what he would have worn at this point. And I always wondered if it was a sign like, see, I can still fit into that uniform I wore in my 20s. But again, he was he's portrayed as a slightly younger man, although he was in his 40s when that portrait was done. So.
So he came up from Virginia. You said he got some more folks at Logstown, currently near Ambridge, and then he started up toward Erie, heading up to what's now the Edinburgh or the Fort LaBeouf. And he, and I'm sure some people are thinking, well, my gosh, he went right up Route 19 or I-79. That was an Indian trail, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, because the way he traveled, it's actually sort of a progression from Indian Trail to Pioneer Wagon Route to Pennsylvania Highway. That's why we don't have many straight roads there. And a little research I've done recently, they also think the Indians actually followed the trail of the buffalo and the mastodons that were here right after the glaciers receded. Hmm. So it's hard to imagine a mastodon walking up Route 19, but that may have been those animals that laid out, because they were taking the path of least resistance, the path that would have avoided the swamps or places where you couldn't cross the river safely. So, mm-hmm.
Did Washington and Christopher Gist, did they have horses?
That's an interesting point. Yes, they did travel on horses, and at some points in some of the group is traveling by canoe, and I think as they added people, they may have had different means of transportation. And you might ask, how do we even know where Washington went? Both Washington and Christopher Gist kept journals that still survive, and they tell a story of them bringing horses down from Fort LaBeouf, and at some point, because it was so cold and they couldn't get to, it was hard to find the creeks that weren't frozen over, they abandoned the horses and set out on foot. Mm-hmm. And that would have been probably right near Harrisville, you know, by the border. Mm-hmm. And then they were walking by on foot the area north of Evans City, somewhere on the Venango Path is what people think. And that's where they picked up this Indian who promised them a shortcut to the Forks of the Ohio to help speed them on their way back. He traveled with them for several hours, and Washington Gist got kind of suspicious that he wasn't leading them in a southerly direction, and they think he was leading him astray. And when they started questioning him, that's when the Indian took a shot at Washington and Gist.
So when the Indian took the shot at Washington, they were on the way back down to Virginia.
Correct,
from,
yeah.
From Fort LaBeouf.
Yes.
Well, that was one close call for George Washington, and, you know, it was a fairly close range. So
yes, right. And he had another close call like the next day, maybe it was 2 days later. Him and Gist get to the Allegheny River near what they think is a 40th Street Bridge. And they think they're going to be able, because it's been so cold, they're going to be able to walk across the river. But it's a tumult of ice, big ice chunks is flowing down. And so him and Gist set out to build a raft, as Washington describes in his journal. We spent all day building a raft with but one poor hatchet, and they're floating across the with these logs. Washington gets dislodged from the raft. Gist has to pull him on. He's covered with frozen water. They land on an island in the middle of the Allegheny, build a fire to try to survive the night. And fortunately, it's so cold that the river, by morning, the river has frozen over. They can walk across the river and then make their way all the way back to Williamsburg.
So why do you think we have that island down there, folks, called Washington's Landing?
Exactly.
Right now? Exactly. And I can remember as a young kid going with my dad when he would take us down to Pittsburgh to see a pirate game. And I was coming down from Parker, so we would come down Route 8 and cross Washington's Crossing, the 40th Street Bridge, to make our way into Oakland. And I can remember Dad telling me that that's why they call it Washington's Crossing. This was right about the place where he crossed the Allegheny. And this would have been late December.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think actually it was December 30th or 29th when they would have been there building that raft across the river.
So George Washington spent Christmas that year here in Butler County.
Exactly, yes, right, he did. Yes, yeah, probably somewhere near the old stone house, because that he would have been on the Venango path. And his journals say they spent the night in an Indian cabin, and of course we imagined a log cabin with a roaring fire. An Indian, what they called an Indian, was really just like a rock outcropping with some branches laid against it. And that's no one knows where that is, but somewhere along that trail they found a little shelter from the cold.
Local history is so fascinating. Listen, our time runs short, but there are a couple of events coming up that I want to mention. One of them with local author Jason Cherry, who's actually been a guest on this program in the past. He's going to be a speaker for you.
Yes, we have our sort of annual dinner meeting is Saturday, March 7th, and Jason's going to be our speaker, and we're looking forward to that. He's title of his book is Pittsburgh's Lost Outpost, and this is about a ex-soldier, Captain William Trent, who actually built like the first kind of, I don't think we can call it a fort, but a first settlement at the Forks. And that kind of predated the French building a fort. The French eventually kicked him out, but that kind of set the stage for the French and Indian War.
So that's what they called it, the Forks of the Ohio. This was before Point State Park.
Right.
But that's what we're talking about. That's the annual dinner for Historic Harmony Museum. And then you have an event coming up in late March, early April.
Yeah, we're excited. We're going to bring together the four cars and a pickup made in Butler County. And so this is an indoor car show that we're having in Stewart Hall, which is our kind of our rental hall that's adjacent to the museum. And we're going to have the 1909 Heuselton, the 1922 Standard 8, 1933 Austin American Pickup, 1939 Bantam Speedster, and a 1941 Bantam Jeep, all made right here in Butler. So it's pretty fascinating. This group of cars, we're going to have them all together. We're also going to have some speakers on Saturday, March 27th and Saturday, April 4th to kind of talk about these. So it's a great chance to see these cars. And this is a program we're doing with the Old Stone House Region Auto Club. Mm-hmm. They some of the members own some of the cars, or they maintain them for other people who own them. So it's going to be a good chance to hear about that bit of Butler history and then see it on wheels. So
we'll get more details on that as we get a little bit closer, but I wanted to alert people that that's coming up. And one other note here as we wrap up our conversation with Rod Gash. Yes, George Washington traveled through our area, gone up to Fort LeBeouf, told the French, please, we'd appreciate it if you stopped building forts the whole way down the Allegheny River. Then George turned around and started back down, as Rod just detailed. Well, the French didn't take too kindly to that mission, and they said, fat chance, we're not leaving. And that was what eventually led to what we call the French and Indian War. But there are a lot of historians who say this was really the first world war between Britain and France battling over this territory right here in western Pennsylvania.
Exactly, and this area was a real hotbed of the activity in North America. There were other battles on the seas in Europe, and so yes, it was considered the sort of the first world war in the sense of different groups and factions all joining together against each other.
I love local history. I love talking about it. I love thinking about it. Yeah. It's a pleasure to have you here, Ron.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having us. And, yeah. And I hope I can see many of your listeners on that hike February 22nd.
We'll be reminding them over the next week or so to get a reservation in for those hikes. It takes place on this year, right on Washington's birthday, February 22nd. Rodney Gash with us. Good to see you.
Thank you,
Dave. Good to see you. That wraps up our program for today. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Hope to see you tomorrow, 12:30, for the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn.